guess that's what brains look like.
Huh?
Sort of like, lasagna, kind of.
Welcome back to Horror Hunks, where we talk horror movies we love and hunks we lust.
Love it. Love it. This week we're talking about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2003. Oh. I'm Chris.
No. I'm the unorganized intestines of the slutty girl who went skinny dipping, Stu Forrest.
I take really good notes. I'm Chris. This week we're talking about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2003. I almost said remake, but after rewatching it, I've decided it's not a remake. I will say the Texas Chainsaw Massacre reimagining, because it's honestly not a lot like the original from 1973, 1974. Now I have to check the date.
74.
Okay. So yeah, a lot of people call it a remake, but I don't classify it as a remake. I didn't see the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre until about 6 months ago, and I don't love it. And so I think that's part of why we're talking about the 2003 version instead of the original on here. I just don't really like the original. All of these horror opinions on this podcast are going to get me. They're going to get me horror canceled, but I think
like
that
the original for like what it was during its time, kind of like The Hills Have Eyes.
Yeah, I'm sure it was great for its time, but having not seen it until 2022, I just don't think I have that connection with it as like a staple of horror movies. The 2003 version was the first Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie I ever saw. And I actually had a whole story where my sister was going to take me for my 16th birthday, and the theater wouldn't let us in because she wasn't my legal guardian. And so, there was all this anticipation with this movie because I just wanted to see it so bad, and I was being told I couldn't see it because I wasn't old enough. So when I did eventually see it, I just ended up really, really loving it. It was one of those gateway horror movies for me, I think, because I'd seen like a lot of horror hit and miss over the years, but this one really kind of like set something off for me that I was like, wow, I really like these kinds of movies.
I saw it. I was legally of age. I think it was the summer after we graduated high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I went and saw it with a girl that I knew who was from Texas, and I didn't, like, at the time, I didn't know anything about Texas, so it was, like, my intro into, I guess, Texas, even though it doesn't really look like Texas, but I guess it does, because I still don't know anything about Texas. I've been to Dallas, that town is insane, but I've not really gotten to see a whole lot of Texas. It's on my list of, like, places to explore, because I want to see.
Yeah, watching this movie, it feels or like looks a little more like it would be like the Kansas Chainsaw Massacre or something.
I mean, I guess that's what Texas looks like. Like, I've heard other people who are from there who have shown me photos of Texas, and a lot of places in Texas kind of look like a lot of places in Indiana.
Yeah. In this movie, I mean, of course, everybody knows sort of like the general idea of a Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie, but we've got a group of five young people who are traveling across Texas in a van. They're on their way to a Lynyrd Skynyrd concert, and I think they're coming back from Mexico, actually.
Yes,
and,
they are.
You know, they are somehow, we'll talk about how in a second, but they're somehow stranded in a really rural part of Texas. And then, you know, they start dying because that's what happens in a horror movie, right? We have Leatherface who comes after them and kills them in various ways. A couple of things I kind of noticed about this movie before we jump into the plot and kind of jump into the hunks and the characters. One, I think that this movie was kind of a pre-torture porn kind of feel before.
It totally was.
Because, you know, like torture, you had like, what were those movies? Hostel and things like that, that were like late 2000s, like 2007, 2008, 2009. were like that, just like, let's gross people out, let's torture these characters. But as I was watching this, I kind of realized, I think this was kind of like maybe the light version of that before it became a big thing.
This was like the intro. So I remember when they started the marketing for this, because I had seen Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I think in high school, maybe middle school, at a friend of mine's house, the original. And then I remember going to the movie theater, and one of the first trailers for this was a black screen, and you hear Jessica Biel screaming and like floorboards and running, and then like it's quiet, and then all of a sudden you hear a chainsaw go, and it just like does the flash bulb sound with the title card, and that was the trailer. Yep. And I remember seeing that and being like, I have to see this movie. Like, I have to see this.
That's similarly what happened with me. And do you remember the movie Cloverfield?
Yes.
And there's a connection because Mike Vogel, who plays one of our hunks in this movie, is also in Cloverfield. So there is a connection. But the trailer for that movie played before something I was seeing in 2007, right? And it didn't really show us anything other than that scene where, like, the Statue of Liberty's head gets ripped off and thrown down the street. It gave 1-18-08 as the date, and that's all we got. We didn't even get a title of the movie. It was super cool.
Those are the best kind of movies, though, that can build, like, hyper suspense. I love it.
Yeah. I said there was another thing I was going to say about this, and I can't remember what it was now. But definitely that pre-torture porn feel. Definitely. The other thing I was going to say is that for an early 2000s horror movie, there's not a lot going on with kind of like how we talk about horror hunks. You know, we've got those three main male characters, but they don't really come across as the type of horror hunk that you would think of in a movie. Like, they're not really objectified, I guess, like they were in the 70s and 80s, like we talked about before.
But I don't think, like, I think no one in this, like, not even the girls, like Jessica Biel, maybe the most objectified person just because she's wearing tight jeans and, like, a cut-off shirt. But beyond that, like, none of the girls are, like, in skimpy clothes. There's no boobs.
No, and I also was kind of, you know, we jot down our notes and we write down kind of like our little analyses of the characters. And both girls, like Erin, which is Jessica Biel, is kind of like the responsible one. She's resourceful. She's independent. But Pepper, who is the other main female character, she's not really not those things. She's a little more helpless. She's a little more afraid. But she's not objectified in any way in the movie.
No.
She's like, she's a hitchhiker. They pick her up and she's immediately making out with Andy, which is Mike Vogel's character. But I mean, there's nothing about like the way they dress her or the way she acts that's really like a typical horror movie girl, right?
Yeah.
I really actually liked how none of the characters really fit into a cookie cutter. We don't get a lot of information about any of them, but then none of them really fit into that cookie cutter trope of horror movie characters, in my opinion.
No, I agree. But I mean, the hunks are still pretty hunky just because every one of the main dudes in this. Woo!
Yeah, and let's talk about our hunks.
Well, we got our first hunk, who is Kemper, which is played by Eric Balfour. Mm-hmm. I can never say his name.
I always say Balfour.
Balfour.
Mm-hmm.
And he, I think he's gotten better with age. Like, I don't think he's that hunky in this, but I've seen him like in recent stuff, and I'm like, he looks better now than he did before.
He kind of has that doofy, like, cute, goofy guy look to him.
Yeah.
He comes across, like, kind of blue collar in this movie. When he's introduced, he's wearing, like, a baseball cap, and he's got his, like, mechanic shirt on that has his name on it. And he's, in there, they never say, like, what he does for a living or anything like that. But he's, you know, the whole idea, I think, is that he's saving up to buy Jessica Biel's character an engagement ring because they've been engaged for 2 years.
He's already got it. So, okay, one thing I love about this movie, besides, like, the visuals of it, is, like, and I think it's one that makes it really divisive amongst horror movie fans is this horror movie shows and doesn't tell, but yes. because it's like one of the first, like within, you know, the torture porn or with remakes, people really love just to like beat it up. This is like the first born kid who was really nerdy but didn't shove it in your face. They just looked the part. So people like to pick on it. But yeah, this one, like, it showed and it didn't tell. So, like, he already did buy her a ring because he is getting, and massive spoilers, of course, when he's getting butchered by Leatherface, the ring falls out.
He finds it, and it's just kind of like,
he finds it. But one of the, like, deleted, or, like, maybe subtle, I don't know. I think it's supposed to be subtle. I'm not sure if it's deleted. Is that Erica Jessica Biel's character is actually pregnant, which is why they like make a note in the beginning that she didn't drink the tequila, she didn't smoke the weed when they were in Mexico.
Yeah, yeah, I read that that was like they cut the storyline, but they kept it subtly there so we could figure it out ourselves. Which is like you were saying, that's something that this movie's really, really good at doing. I saw that Siskel and Ebert, one of the two of them, gave this like zero thumbs up. And I was like, one, the visuals alone in this movie make it worth watching.
Yes.
So,
well, and the same cinematographer as the original is the one who did this.
But this movie is also really good at, it has, so it's a slasher, right? We're not expecting an Academy Award winning movie, and in a lot of ways it's not, but man, this movie has some like emotional beats to it. There are these moments, and we'll like hit on them more specifically later, but like the wedding ring thing, when Leatherface is revealed to be wearing Kemper's face later.
Yeah.
When Aaron has to stab Andy in the stomach to put him out of his misery. Like, these moments are so like gut-wrenching within this like kind of funny slasher movie. The movie has some really funny moments in it too. But they're kind of like icky funny moments.
Yeah.
So the movie starts out, and it jumps right into what's going on. We've got the five leads: Kemper, Morgan, Andy, Aaron, and Pepper are driving to this concert, and they almost hit she's not even a hitchhiker. They almost hit a girl walking down the middle of the road. They bring her into the car because she's kind of distraught. They bring her into the van because she's kind of distraught. And as they're driving her to find her family or wherever they're going, she kind of starts freaking out. And this scene is probably one of the best horror movie scenes I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
Because the girl doesn't even have a name in the credits. She's just, I think, teenage hitchhiker or something.
Something like a teenage girl or teenage hitchhiker.
Yeah. But this girl is panicking because she sees the direction they're driving, and she says, we're going the wrong way. We're going the wrong way. And she pulls a gun, I'll say, out of her dress.
Out of herself.
Yeah. Which is like very, it's not like explicit, but it like, where else was this gun stashed?
Well, it's also bloody. Like there's like blood everywhere.
But she proceeds to put the gun in her mouth and shoot herself in the head. And the shot immediately after, where the camera pans, everybody's screaming, right? Everybody is just screaming into the camera, and the camera pans through the hole in her head and out the back of the van. And I just think that that is one of the best shots I have ever seen in a horror movie.
Oh, really? Like the whole scene of that? Like, because I've watched the special edition DVD and everything, and saw the entire making of that. And like they, when she puts the gun in her mouth, they like blast her in the face with compressed air, like make her cheeks go up. And then they have the dummy of her with the camera that was like a really tiny camera on, I think it was a pole. And they had it out and then, like, would pan it back. And I think they had to do it way more than once because they couldn't get the dummy to fall backward.
Yeah, because as the camera as the camera pans out of the hole in the back of her head, the dummy head, like, or the girl's head, like, falls backwards too. So it's a very, like, a 10-second very intricate shot,
and it's super cool. I mean, and again, like, this movie, like, it had throwbacks to the original, but it did some cinematography and it did some cinematic works that are underappreciated in my opinion.
Yeah, and even just sort of like, I wrote down the sets are extremely good, and then I put the house in the woods, because even like, so the house itself, I don't even know how to describe it because I don't know architecture, but the house is insane.
It's like a southern plantation style house,
but it's like boxy and brick too. Yeah. Which but so like so many shots of this house where it's like backlit and it's like foggy, and it just gives you this eerie feeling every time you see it, which of course you're supposed to feel that, but they do such a good job of like making you feel that through just these exterior shots of the house. And there's one other scene where Erin is she's not in danger at the moment, but she's kind of like looking for Kemper in the woods. And there's just this shot, like she's just in the woods, but like the light streaming through the trees and the fog just makes it such a like beautiful shot of her in the woods that I don't know how anybody could watch this movie and say like, oh no, 0 stars. Like, exactly. Even for those things alone.
But even like beyond the cinematography, the like, I guess you'd call it set design, even though most of these were outdoors, is just like very deep and rich. There's abandoned cars all over the place. And later on, like when they're searching, they find a piece of like a human jaw with teeth on it.
So disgusting.
And there's like, and like you had put in your notes, like that there's like an abandoned butcher store and an abandoned mill. And there's just so much detail in everything. I don't like, it was, you know, I think it might be one of the most underappreciated contemporary horror movies.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And, what Stu is mentioning, I sent him a picture when I was taking notes, and I said, if this old abandoned mill is not Stu's wet dream, because we've talked about in the past, we've talked about in the past how Stu likes to explore abandoned buildings. And of course our characters, after the hitchhiker girl shoots herself, they go into this, I don't even know if it's a town necessarily, but they go into the town. They're trying to report a suicide, right? Because this girl shot herself in their van. And apparently the sheriff is too busy to come in and meet them. So he wants them to drive out to this old abandoned mill where he
will they also meet Jedediah, the kid? When I rewatched it, I was like trying to think of where I saw this kid, and I'm like, oh shit, it's the kid from The Ring.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. That makes some sense. But yeah, so while they go to this abandoned mill, and of course the sheriff, who I am still not completely sure if he's actually the sheriff, because there's a line we'll talk about.
Yeah.
But they're exploring this abandoned mill, trying to find the sheriff, and instead they find like this like wild 10-year-old who's like kind of camped out in the mill, and he's not like malevolent or anything. He's kind of just skittish around them, and his character comes into play later on with who he is and you know how he's related to the other people in the movie. But when they do eventually meet the sheriff, it's R. Lee Ermey, I know that he is it like Full Metal Jacket that he was in.
Mm-hmm.
I know him from Toy Story. So seeing what he's doing in this movie and hearing some of the things he says was just shocking to me, right? Because this sheriff he's crude, he's disgusting. It's a like small town. It starts out as a small town Texas vibe, but quickly turns into something much worse later on. I will venture to say that he is the villain of this movie, because compared to Leatherface, we get so much more of the sheriff, and he's really, really not a cool dude.
I mean, he's intentionally an asshole.
And it's not even just that. He's gross.
He's a sociopath.
You know, he's looking at the body of the girl in their van, and one, he starts to wrap her in saran wrap. transport her.
But he makes Andy get up there in the line, like, and that whole scene is just uncomfortable because he starts saran wrapping her first off, and of course it's a dead body and it's been sitting in, you know, their van. You can, like, and everything about it, you can imagine, like, the smell and the blood's all, like, getting clumpy. And he, like, tells Andy to, like, grab her head so he can saran wrap it. And he, like, of course, does not want to touch it, you know. Any normal person wouldn't want to touch a dead body that's all, like, covered in blood. And he tells him, well, get on up there. She's not going to bite. She's deader than a fucking doornail. I'm like, this guy is insane. And then he grabs her dead boob.
He does. He gropes her and, trying to think of, like, the best way to say this, he feels between her legs.
Yep.
And then starts to make some jokes about, like, oh, what have you guys been doing with this girl? And it's like, oh my God. Like,
I mean,
I think everybody,
the way he puts it, because he says, what have y'all been doing with this dead body? I mean, you can tell the guy's a sociopath.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't think anybody is watching this movie and are like, oh, that's a good sheriff. He's not a villain at all. But they set it up from the beginning that he is just not right. And it continues throughout the rest of the movie. But this is one of those scenes, and there's several of them in the movie, where I think they almost feel like short films. It's like little vignettes within the movie, because some of these scenes are just so long. And so, like, the scene where he's like, they're getting rid of the body, or he has them put it in his trunk, which is probably not sheriff protocol, but there's just these scenes that are very long and very uncomfortable in the movie, and they feel like little short films. The other one that I'm thinking of off the top of my head is when he has Morgan, who is played by Jonathan Tucker. So Morgan is in the back seat of the police cruiser at one point, and there's just this very long, torturous scene that's just, like, more uncomfortable than anything, but it just feels like a short movie.
See, I didn't, I like, uncomfortable is not the word I would use. It feel maybe, like, whatever that feeling is, anxiety inducing. It's, mm-hmm. you know, the entire time in that scene, the longer it goes on, the more you're like, the sheriff is going to kill this guy.
Yeah, and we'll, not to get, like, too far ahead of ourselves, we'll talk about kind of what goes down. But it is essentially like, and you kind of see it on Morgan's face as the scene progresses, of he and it's funny because he doesn't die at this point in the movie, but you kind of see it in his face as the scene goes along of, like, I'm not getting out of this. And there's a lot of subtle things in this movie that make it a lot better than people give it credit for, whether it's the subtle things the actors do, if it's subtle storytelling bits. One of the things that I noticed when they're exploring, they're kind of just exploring the land, right? I don't know if they're specifically at the house or if they're at the mill, but they find some cars, they find that retainer that has the teeth attached to it, but they also find a jar with a family photo inside of it. And the one of the people in the family photo is the hitchhiking girl who killed herself. But there is a baby in this movie who, I don't really like the storyline with the baby, but that baby is also in the photo, and nobody ever says it, like, aloud. We just are supposed to make the connection that, oh, that baby in the photo is also this baby that we see later on in the movie. And those are some of the things about the movie that make me like it so much more.
It shows and it doesn't tell. But then, you know what's also fucked up that you're supposed to think about? How else do you think she got that gun up there?
Oh, it was probably her kid, right?
She pushed a baby out of her and was able to get the gun up there because she already tore.
Yeah. But as the mill scene ends, it's not anything. That's another thing with this movie, is there's not a lot of, like, gore and violence other than that shooting. In the beginning of the movie, it's more of a mystery. They're exploring. They're trying to figure out, why is this place so weird? What's going on? The people are just so strange. And then we get to the scene where Aaron and Kemper go to the house. Kemper want, or I'm sorry, Erin wants to make a call. I think she's calling the police, actually.
Yeah.
And the old man who lives in the house is in a wheelchair, and he says that Erin can go in and make a call, but Kemper has to stay outside. Which, for me, right away, I'd be like, nope, we'll find a different house. Like, yeah. My girlfriend's not going into this house to make a call, and I don't know who lives here, you know? But she does, and Kemper ends up going into the house to look for her because she hasn't come out. And just out of nowhere, Leatherface pops up, hits him in the head with a mallet, and drags him away. Tell me if I'm wrong. We don't actually see Kemper's death in the movie, but
we can assume that that killed him, even though he's moving around. But that could just be, you know, him dying. His bodies do that.
Yeah, and I read that the MPAA really made them cut back on the kill scenes in this, and so originally that. The mallet to the head scene, he was supposed to be like convulsing and like spraying blood. So like we can assume that if that didn't kill him, he was about to die moments later. But it was shocking to me because Kemper is, you know, Eric Balfour's character is set up to kind of be the main guy of this movie. And he is the first of the main group to go.
Well, I knew he was going to die because they figure out that this pinata that you see, Andy kind of clutching onto earlier is stuffed with weed that they plan on selling that they brought back from Mexico. So she gets pissed at him. And that's when I was like, well, he's going to die, I bet, because he brought in weed from Mexico. And it's still a horror movie that kind of still sticks to certain horror movie rules. And so I kind of figured that's when he was definitely going to die.
Yeah, and another one of those subtle storytelling things I just thought of is that's the same scene where she's kind of mad at him about the bringing the weed back from Mexico is also the same scene where she is talking about wanting an engagement ring. And he's like, oh, I'm working on it. You know he was going to give her that ring at the Lynyrd Skynyrd concert.
Yeah.
And it's so sad because, again, it's like those little things that they put into the movie that just make it a little more of like a twist of a knife in your gut because he had the ring the whole time and she was mad at him about that. She was mad at him about the weed. It just, it's so good.
And she's secretly pregnant with his child.
Yeah, that is also a fact of this movie.
Speaking of Eric, and being one of our honks, in the behind the scenes, when he finished rapping, like when he was done filming, he stripped completely naked on set and like threw his clothes. And he was just like, I don't want this. I don't want that. I'm done. And like walks off completely butt ass naked.
I read about that and I was like, oh, I have the DVD. I'm going to have to see if it's the one with that featurette on it. Eric Balfour is naked in pretty much everything he's in. But
When I saw it at the time, I was just like, oh my God, he's completely buck naked. And then I Googled him or whatever was before Google, like when this movie came out, 2003, Yahoo, I don't remember, Alta Vista. And then I saw like whatever he had, like, had been in before. I was just like, oh well, he's completely buck naked.
Yeah, and like I think most things he's in, which is like cool that he's cool with doing that because a lot of actors are not cool with on-screen nudity.
I think everyone should be more like Charlie Puth and just get naked.
Yeah, exactly. So one of the things that does frustrate me a little bit about this movie is that I have a hard time keeping the series of events in order because it does feel like these just little snippets where they're going from place to place. And there's so many kind of like scene and set changes that after Kemper gets dragged away, I don't really remember what happens next. So she leaves again.
Yeah, she goes back and meets up with the rest of the group. But that's – and then they figure out that he's not there or he's – like Eric Kemper is not back there.
This is the scene that makes me think that the sheriff is not actually the sheriff. I don't know if it's implied or if I'm just reading too much into it, but I forgot. So she goes back to the mill and she tells them, okay, I called, the sheriff's on his way. And they're like, no, the sheriff was just here.
Yeah.
So I don't think that that guy is actually the sheriff, but then how is he running around in like a sheriff's cruiser impersonating a sheriff and like helping murder people? I don't know how that's supposed to play out, but
you don't hear any, like she, like you don't hear who she's talking to. Mm-hmm. So I kind of thought either he's not actually the sheriff or whoever she's talking to is also in on it.
Okay. Okay. Because honestly, no spoilers for a 20-year-old movie, but literally everybody but them in the movie is really in on it because they're all part of this family. It's the Hewitt family. I don't know if they had a last name in the original movie, if it was Hewitt.
They did. It was okay. Sawyer.
Sawyer. Okay. So it's a completely different, like, it's a reimagining, right? It's a different family last name, but it's the same dynamic. They essentially abduct these people, and it's implied that they eat them. It's never like shown, but there's some nasty stuff going on in the kitchen. So they eat these people. And the next kind of scene that pops into my head, kind of going in as much order as I can, remembering the movie, but Aaron and Andy go back to the house, and they are looking for Kemper now. And so they, Aaron distracts the old man in the wheelchair, and Andy is going to go in and look for Kemper. And he goes in and he's exploring the kitchen, and he finds all these gross pots and pans, and I think they have bones in them. And he makes like some noise. And in another really, really great scene, Jessica Biel runs inside to check on Andy. And while they're in the hallway, and this is an homage to the original, but I think it's done better in this one. You know, Leatherface slams that metal door open, and he just comes at them with a chainsaw. And it is just a terrifying sequence.
Well, and like, I think the old man trips, or Andy falls back with his tire iron. That's his only weapon.
Mm-hmm.
And Aaron makes it out. But then Leatherface goes for Andy, and he blocks it with the tire iron. He gets up and runs out. And, like, I know, like, our good horror stud, James Janisse, had something to say. He thought it looked nice, but called it a horror movie trope of him running through the sheets hanging on the lines.
I love it.
But I thought it was amazing. It was suspenseful. It looked nice. But then Leatherface chops our boy Andy off at the shin.
Yeah, and so that's, I think it's like a very expected moment in the movie, but it's still just so creepy because they're running. We've all seen it. James A. Janisse is right. Like, you know, the running through the sheets and somebody's chasing you through the sheets so you can't really see where they are. And yeah, Leatherface just cuts one of his legs off and drags him into the basement of this house, and this excruciatingly hangs him on a meat hook.
Hangs while he's alive. And then takes and salts his leg where he got cut off and wraps it up with meat paper.
Yeah.
Which is another like part that I think part of the great storytelling here, because they go back later on in the movie to a slaughterhouse.
Yeah.
And it looks like there's pigs there. So it's got to be an active slaughterhouse, which makes you think, you know, Leatherface knows what he's doing when it comes to like butchering and like curing meat.
Yeah,
and
no,
so,
yeah, exactly.
And he feeds in even more to the idea that they are actually eating these people.
Yeah, and essentially he's hanging Andy on this meat hook and preserving his meat, right? You know, you salt meat so that it lasts longer, and he's salting this open wound essentially so that Andy lasts longer and they can prepare him and eat him as they need. It's really disgusting. It's a really gross scene, actually, but I do love it. And I will just say that Andy is my favorite character in this movie. And
me too.
He has the most excruciating... This isn't even his death, because he's still alive much later in the movie when we see him again. But this is like... He has the most torturous, excruciating pre-death of a lot of movies I've seen, because even just getting your leg chopped off with a chainsaw, that's enough, right? But then he gets hung on a meat hook and then literally salt in the wound of his open leg wound. And it's just like, it's one of those moments when, and I hope you know what I'm saying when I say this, it's one of those moments when he gets hung on the meat hook, I feel it, like physically feel it in my balls when he hangs him on the meat hook. And it's not just like a once, it's every time I see that scene. It's like this anxiety tingle goes through my balls. And it's like just that moment of the movie is just so horrible.
Which Andy is, he is up there. So
he's
like,
fine.
He is just like he's a surfer dude who
he's up there because he's hot, or he's up there because he's on a meat hook.
I mean, unfortunately, he's up there because he's on a meat hook, but he's up there on my list because he's fine. And I think it was either before or after. I don't remember. But I had seen Mike Vogel in Grind, which is a skateboard movie. It was like during that time when they kept making like all these very
like Lords of Dogtown.
And, yeah, like very niche movies. So you had like surfer movies for a while, and then you had skateboard movies for a while. Well, he was in Grind, and I was like instantly like had a crush. Just I was like, yeah, this guy is he is fine, and he's
that's the thing. He
in a, like a tank top the entire time.
Yeah, and like that's one of the notes that I wrote about all of the characters that I just wrote. Generally hot and sweaty because it's Texas, it's August. They're all
generally listening. They're all like top tier hot and sweaty.
Yeah,
and the girls like Jessica Biel. And like I would almost put Jessica Biel on our hunks list because she's
insanely
feminine,
attractive in this movie.
But she's insanely attractive.
I was saying how they don't really have like tropes that go along with the characters in this movie, but I think Andy is kind of like the shaggy haired hunk, like the surfer guy. He's kind of dumb at certain points, but he's not like ridiculously to the point where he gets himself killed. But yeah, I of all of the characters, he is my favorite. And I think they were planning on that because why wouldn't they give the favorite character the most excruciating death, right?
Exactly. Either that or, well, I think in number two, a very close number two, is Jonathan Tucker.
Oh, absolutely not.
Really? I think he is adorable. Like, I think he is insanely attractive. And, like,
in
one
life,
of the funny...
In life, yes. In this movie, no.
Oh, I don't know. In this movie, I think so. Like, he's definitely, like, a close number two hunks.
So I'm ranking them Andy, Kemp, or Morgan. But my thing with Morgan, you know how I am, like, personality does a lot for me. And his personality in this movie is not great. He's kind of like the wise guy, least likable, wet blanket of the group. And I just don't like his personality. So maybe that's why I don't find him slightly attractive in this. I like his clothes. I was thinking, like, he's got the long sleeve baseball tee and the, like, Converse Chuck Taylors on. I'm like, oh, I would wear that today.
That's exactly it. But I'm also purely objectifying these guys.
No, and that's fine, but I just don't like him. And I think something about his, like, he's got some scraggly facial hair. Like he's trying to grow mutton chops, but it didn't quite work out for him. I don't like that.
Well, what's funny is, I can't remember, and I know it a little bit, but he almost didn't get that role. Like, he tried really hard to get that role. But the director of it had seen him in The Virgin Suicides and thought that he was too cute and he had too much of a boyish face to play this character. But Jonathan Tucker he's a fantastic actor, and he's really good at playing either the kind of wet blanket smartass or a complete sociopath. So I've seen a lot of things that he's been in.
The only other thing that I immediately remember him from, and it's just because I watched it a few weeks ago, was The Ruins. And he's also kind of like that geeky, I don't love fun kind of character in The Ruins. And so maybe that's just like what he's good at playing.
I think that's what he's been typecast as, because he's either playing the bad boy or he's playing that.
I will say that of all of the characters, he's really the only one that gets like a smidge of character development, because he does end up later on sacrificing himself so that Aaron can get away.
Yeah.
As the movie goes along, it essentially goes from being kind of like a mystery, trying to figure out what's going on, to where they realize that something, well, obviously when Leatherface attacks Andy and Aaron, she knows something's going on. And we kind of get to the point where Pepper and Aaron are caught by the sheriff, and they're kind of getting with Morgan, and they're kind of getting interrogated in the van, which is like kind of the crime scene because the girl shot herself. And this is where it starts getting to where the sheriff is just being sadistic. He makes Morgan put the gun in his mouth. He
makes him sit in the spot where the girl was, and there's a bloody clump, and he like scoots and like tries to like move it so he's not directly sitting on it, but he's on its hand. Like the entire, like I feel for him the entire time. It's you know, psychological torture.
Yeah, and that's also the scene. So he makes the girls get out of the van and lay on the ground, and he keeps Morgan in the van and is kind of just torturing him with sit where the shooting was, put the gun in your mouth. And Morgan has had enough, rightfully, and points the gun at the sheriff. And this is the moment when I was saying, like, you can see it in his face that he realizes he's not surviving the night.
Yeah.
Because the girls are screaming. Pepper's screaming for him to shoot the sheriff. Aaron's screaming for him not to do it. And he pulls the trigger, but the gun isn't loaded. And that look on his face when he realizes that the gun isn't loaded just says everything. He's like, I'm not getting out of this. And he doesn't. It doesn't go the way you think it's going to. Again, it's just like a very long, uncomfortable, sadistic scene. With the girls, Leatherface shows up. And I don't love this moment of the movie because it's very random that he just comes and like chops Pepper up. He's like, what does he do? He's attacking them in the van, and we don't ever actually like see Leatherface. Pepper gets out of the van and runs to the front, and he comes out and just chops her up. But when he turns around, we have that again, iconic, I'm going to say, shot. I don't know why there's like feathers flying around. I don't know if there's like a pillow or something, but you've got like this, it looks like snow, but it's like feathers flying around, and he turns around and he's wearing Kemper's face.
Yes.
I will say that like after this point, it sort of gets a little dull for me for part of it, because we have the whole scene where Aaron runs off, she runs into the woods, she finds this trailer with these two really strange ladies in it. They drug her tea.
So have a baby.
They have a baby that happens to be the baby from the photo we were talking about earlier. It's all very, like, so many pieces of this movie feel like they fit together great as a movie, but they feel like they weren't filmed as a movie necessarily. And
which
so the
is
whole
funny, because the movie was actually filmed in chronological order.
Okay, and maybe that has something to do with it, but like, so this whole scene in the trailer, it's great. The ladies are creepy, they drug her tea, and like, Aaron has this realization, like, she's screaming, that's not your baby, because she recognizes it from the photo, and then she wakes up in the house, right?
Yeah, she is tied to a chair, or am I confusing that with the original? Or she's sitting in a chair?
I don't remember exactly the situation she wakes up in. I do know that they are fully just planning on torturing her. And she, you know, this is one of the things I don't like about either Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie, of like the original or the reimagining, is this long drawn out chase scene. I think like a third of the first movie is that Sally chase scene, and I don't like it.
Yeah.
This one it's less so. But, you know, they never explicitly say they're going to eat her or anything like that. The sheriff does make a joke about her staying for dinner. But again, they don't say it necessarily that they're going to eat her or they're going to eat Andy or whatever. But she escapes. She goes on her final girl, like, running spree. She's being chased. And she finds Morgan and starts running off. The little boy, Jedediah, helps them escape. And they're in a cellar, which I don't remember how they got to the cellar because everything just feels so sporadic. But and then they're hiding in this kind of like cabin in the woods. And Morgan's injured. He's handcuffed still from the sheriff. She puts him in a cabinet, and then she is hiding in another room. And like Leatherface comes in and is looking for them, and she does the thing in horror movies that I really don't like, and it's like there's a rat on her, and so she starts to freak out. Mm-hmm. If I'm in a situation where there's a man chasing me with a chainsaw, that rat, it's my new best friend. We're gonna cuddle up. I'm gonna put it in my pocket. Like whatever I need to do, I'm not gonna freak out and cry.
See, I think I would be like, in my head, if then a rat got on me, I'd be like, this is the last fucking straw. I hear, like, I would probably die just because I'd be like, oh, fuck, like, what now?
Well, that's kind of what happens in this, is that she, like, pushes the rat off of her, and it makes a noise, and like Leatherface finds her. But this is the part where Morgan, who I don't like, busts out of the cabinet and is like attacking Leatherface with these handcuffs on, trying to save Aaron, which is like, again, one of the few moments of character development that we get, because he's seen in the beginning of the movie as being very selfish. He wants to dump the body. He doesn't want to miss the concert. And now he's like putting himself on the line to help Aaron, and it gets him killed. Leatherface hangs him by a chandelier with the handcuffs, mm-hmm. and then takes the chainsaw to his nuts.
Yeah, like right at the middle.
It's like not graphic. It's not gross. It was another death that I read that they had to cut a big chunk of it because they had like intestines spilling out and everything. But, you know, that tells you about like early 2000s horror and how we were kind of on the cusp of this gore fest torture porn, but we weren't quite there yet. And I will mention that the point of the movie where I start to not like it anymore is once all of the hunks are dead. She rescues the baby. She fights Leatherface in the slaughterhouse. I don't think it's particularly like a great scene. She does like cause him to cut his own arm off with the chainsaw.
Or no, she hacks his arm off with a butcher knife.
Well, that tells you how much it settled with me. I thought that like he somehow accidentally cut it off with a chainsaw while he was fighting her.
Oh, you're right. I don't remember if he did it in this one, but in the original, he accidentally cuts his leg with the chainsaw.
He does it in this one too, because they said it was okay. a purposeful moment that they wanted to like pay homage. She runs over the sheriff, gets into a semi, where I think the driver gets killed by Leatherface because she's driving the semi at the end.
Yeah.
Takes the baby and escapes, you know, similarly to Sally Hardesty from the original. Instead of jumping into the bed of a truck, she's driving a semi away, and she gets away into the night. Leatherface is shown to still be alive, but I don't think we ever got a direct sequel to this movie.
No.
There was like a prequel or two or three prequels, but there was never one that took place like directly after this one.
I love it. I was obsessed with this movie for a little while.
Kind of talking about our hunks, we spent a lot of this episode talking about the movie and not the hunks, and I think it's just because it felt like a different kind of movie when it came to the men. They weren't scantily clad or objectified. They were sweaty and like glistening in the summer heat, but I'm going to say that like in this instance, we're the hunks, because there's not a lot of hunk action in this movie. So you and I are the horror hunks.
Okay.
And Kemper, Morgan, and Andy are just sort of the characters we're talking about. But I know, and you know, who's our number one hunk of this movie?
Andy.
It's Andy. 100% it's Andy. Honestly,
R.I.P. our sweet surfer Andy.
Yeah, if you ask me, Mike Vogel is going to be the honorary hunk of whatever he's in.
Oh, yeah.
I just think that he's a gorgeous human being. But and you can feel how you feel about Morgan. That's fine. And I think Kemper is like a good runner-up as a hunk, too.
I agree. But I love the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. After I saw that movie, one, I had to go home and Google who Andy was played by and watch every movie he was ever in.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I really want to go to Texas and find these abandoned places.
Of course you do. Of course you do. That's how we're going to wrap it up. You want to go to Texas and die.
I want to go to Texas and find these abandoned places.
You know what happens in these movies, though. The people find the abandoned places, and then they do not come out alive.
Yes, true.
Yeah. So that's going to wrap up this discussion of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2003. What are we watching next time? Do we know?
Oh, I don't know. I kind of want to watch Friday the 13th Part 2.
Let's do it.
Just because that is the one with the guy in the wheelchair, isn't it?
Your man, yeah.
With my man. I got a lot to say about him. And then we'll have to, like,
re-record. Stay horny.
Stay horny, don't get murdered.
Yeah, stay horny, don't die.
Stay horny, don't die.
Stay horny, don't die. That's our closing right there.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of Horror Hunks. Your hosts were Stu Forrest and me, Chris Waltz. Join us again in 2 weeks when we discuss Friday the 13th, Part 2. Horror Hunks is a Dead Oaks production with music produced by Ben Bryles. Find us on Twitter @HorrorHunks, and until next time, stay horny, don't die.